it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
All right, we're back on the pod. Goodness gracious. You know, sometimes I'm blessed with interviewing great players, and then I'm blessed with interviewing really great players. I am surrounded by greatness today. We have none other than, I now call him colleague, which is, I know, scary for him, Barry Larkin, Eric Davis. Welcome to the Jim Day Podcast. How you guys doing?
First of all, you said players,
doing good.
Bro. You said players.
Come you're on you're players forever, man.
Players? Boogie,
yeah.
Boogie, you still a player?
I'm not a player. I just crush a lot.
See?
Here we go.
Here we go.
That's what that is.
We're off and running, which is a beautiful thing. Now, you called him Boogie. Where did this name come from? Is this something we can broadcast?
Sure you can.
No, you can't call him Boogie. I can call him Boogie.
No, not me.
You cannot call him Boogie. People cannot never, call him Boogie.
I have never called him Boogie one time,
Boogie.
Nor will I ever. But where did it come from?
I don't know. His mama gave
all
him that
the people who call me Boogie call me Boogie because they know. Well, it just had something to do with my ability to dance.
Really?
And Boogie.
And boogieing. And
I could see it.
Oogie joogie downtown, boogie, oogie, oogie, you know what I'm saying? So that's kind of where it came from just from that aspect of it.
Well, I could see it because when I was escorting you guys to where we're doing this, by the way, we're in an echoey office, so we're just got to put up with that. But he had a strut. He was kind of strutting through, and he's
what
I'm
he saying, does.
Man, you got a nice strut going on.
What he does. I'm telling you, man, this dude right here, he set the tone, like, with his words, but, you know, the way that he showed up to the ballpark. You know, I see it now with these kids. He brings he's Boogie. You know, yeah. He brings it's like this thing that he brings that you just pick up on, and it's all about confidence. It's all about swag. It's about representation. It's Boogie. That's what it is. It's Boogie.
That was good, man.
It is what it is.
You know what I'm saying? That was really, really. I was going to say Soul Train with Don Cornelius or something, and he brought me all the way to the ballpark. So that was good. I like that.
Soul Train with Don Cornelius. Now you're right in my wheelhouse. Now I love that. I love that action. You guys have remained friends, close friends, I'm assuming, over the years. What? Let me ask each of you, and this is kind of a softer question, but what do you think about each other? Like, when I say Eric Davis, what do you think about Eric Davis and the friendship?
Well, I have so much respect and love for him. You know, my first interaction with Boogie was after the season. He asked me, after my first season in 86, he said, what are you doing the offseason? I said, I don't know, just kind of chill or whatever. He said, I want you to come out to LA. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, I'm 22 years old. I'm going out to LA, and I get there at 7-8 o'clock at night, and then 6 or 7 o'clock the next morning, we're out running the hills in Woodland Hills. And he tells me, he's like, you know, it's easy to get to the big leagues, but it's tough to stay here. And, you know, I want to show you and kind of impress upon you that, you know, it takes some hard work to stay there. So this is what we do. And that was my first, you know, obviously during the season I was playing and watching him and, you know, kind of trying to imitate and emulate things that he was doing. But it was more kind of like the presence that he had that was more impactful. And then when he invited me to his house, not really knowing me, it just kind of really impressed upon me the type of person that he is. He's an amazing person.
When I say Barry Larkin, what's that mean to you?
Off the top, just consistency in everything that he does, on the field, off the field, in between. Watching him grow, he was consistently doing the things that it took to get to where he wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
having an understanding of where he wanted to go was consistent. The first time I saw him was during the 84 Olympic team, and they came through Cincinnati. And not really knowing him, but hearing about him, and I'm watching, and I'm watching everybody do what they do. And just some odd little conversations was about him not starting. I think it was Gary Green or somebody yep. like that, the guy from the Padres. And I'm watching this guy, and I'm watching him, and I'm saying, okay, that didn't like really resonate with me. But just from watching him, he was kind of cool with it at that moment. And instead of being angry at that moment, he was kind of cool with it because of just his aura about him at that particular time. And then when we got him and I saw a little bit of that, and that what started me into the movement of, I don't know if this kid know how good he is right now, but how great he can be in the future. And then watching him grow into that, you don't play 20 years.
No.
And then you don't play 20 years from one team. You know what I'm saying? And be the things that he was, and then watching his model of consistency, and then watching him improve. And I tell him this all the time, and I tell the kids, college kids and high school kids, that most college kids don't improve. They are what they are when you get them. And I use him as an example because he did get better. If you watch the way he was when we first got him in conjunction to what he turned out to be, you never thought he would hit 20 home runs and be the first shortstop in Major League Baseball to go 30-30. So watching him do that lets me know that he wasn't a selfish individual, or he knew it all, because he was open for suggestions. And that was just his ability to want to be consistent and want to be good.
Yeah. Now, I look back, and everyone loved that 1990 team, what you guys did, how you captured the city. And I don't want to say coming out of nowhere, because you guys were pretty good before that. But, man, people love that team and the characters on the team. Can you guys talk about how it was built, that team was built? Because there's a lot of guys that came up through the system together. You added some pieces, but just the people that don't know how that
just from the
built,
because that was years in the making.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Pete Rose built that.
Yeah.
Because Pete was a person who he saw what he saw, he liked what he liked, he wanted what he wanted. And he didn't allow how much time you had or what kind of seasoning you had in order to help us in Cincinnati. And I always say right now, I still talk to Pete. He still calls me on my birthday every day, every year. And just, you have to have somebody to believe in you. And Pete believed in me at 21 years old. And then when you saw Barry and Stillwell and Tracy Jones and Paul O'Neill and Cal Daniels, I think one year he took four or five rookies. And that's just the way he was. And then yeah. we finished second. And then we had to straighten out some things, with Lark going from number 15 to number 11, which his chest came out when he became 1-1 and stuff like that.
Heck,
and then
yeah.
moving on from Dave Concepcion was real big for us. And then Sabo coming and moving on from Buddy Bell and those guys was that, and Joe Oliver. So we kind of pushed our way into that. I was before that, but I kind of pushed my way into center field with Eddie Milner and those guys. And then you watch these guys come, and then you started to see us kind of migrate together, because I got to Cincinnati in 84, and then Barry came in 86, and Paul came in 86 or 87. And then you started to see Browning came in 85. And so you started to see our yeah. farm system really materialize. And then finishing second, like 3 out of 4 years or 4 out of 5 years under Pete, not being able to get over that hump. And then we all know what happened in 89 with the suspensions and different things like that. And Luke coming in and really giving us the drive and the determination to know that we were good and it was okay for us to show it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of how I remember it. It was a lot of young. We had a lot of youth on that team. You know, we did have some outliers here and there. But it was Boogie's team, and we were just kind of the young guys that we really played like we didn't have anything to lose, because we all were so young at that time, you know. And, you know, Lou Piniella came in, and I think he was really good at orchestrating or kind of setting the tone for, I don't like losing, and we're not going to lose kind of concept. You know, totally different personality than Pete Rose. But yes, Pete Rose gave us all as young players an opportunity. He didn't really care about where you were drafted or how old you were. It was about how you play and how you get after it. And we all got after it. We all happened to be young. And, you know, he pushed for us all to be up in the big leagues. And it was very different than other organizations, because I believe we were about one of the youngest teams at that time.
Now, I asked that question for this reason. You guys are working with minor leaguers as we speak, which is great. To see you guys in Reds uniforms is terrific. And I can see how the guys are magnetized towards you, and which is saying something, because there's a generation gap there, probably more than ever right now. But what I'm getting at is, do you see the same type of things? Like, you can see certain kids placing them there, that these kids are going to come up in the system together, and they're very talented, more talented players, in my opinion, that we've had in a while. I shouldn't say we, than the Reds have had in a while. Can you see the formulation of a good team through these young kids you're working with?
Well, that's kind of a difficult question to answer, because, you know, we're not as involved overall. We're kind of involved in the minor leagues. Yeah. So you're talking about when these kids ascend to the big leagues. You know, I don't think either one of us are really in a position to really comment at too much on that, because we really don't have those kind of discussions.
Yeah.
Is there talent? Absolutely. There's plenty of talent. But kind of when they allow them, kind of how Pete did with us and brought up the young guys together, what they're going to do with them as far as taking them to the big leagues.
Yeah. I know. I know that's not in your paper.
Yeah, but you can see it.
Just the talent.
Yeah, you can see it. And it's times there we fantasize when we are hop-nodging amongst each other in the coach's office, and we have our own little conversations about the players and what we see, and for the first time in a long time, we've had a opportunity to really feel good about each position in the minor leagues that could transform itself into the major leagues. We got a chance to see what Christian and Consolacion can do. You know what Ellie can do. You see what Marte can do. Now you have an opportunity for Matt McClain to play second base, and then you put Stevenson behind the plate. So you have a formula to where you start to resonate and be like, dang, if this comes to fruition, you can see some similarities in how we moved. The only one I'd probably say we didn't have was second base, but you saw the outfield, you saw certain positions, and then you saw them kind of move in an easier pace. Now, how that transforms up to what they do in Cincinnati, I have no idea. Right. But just fantasizing, we do that sometimes. You look at some of these kids, and then you see the Jay Allens and the Rhys Hines and Austin Hendricks and these guys. You be like, man, if these kids can kind of grasp it quicker, you could start to see like that whole movement, almost like the Dodgers did with, say, Garvey, Lopes, and Russell, and then the Big Red Machine, how guys were there for a long period of time. So it's fun to fantasize, but to be able to see it, yeah, you see some of those kind of things. Hopefully you do.
I'm going to tell you one thing that I picked up on from the players. Last time I was here, you see some young players playing, and there were a lot of acquisitions, a lot of bringing in, like, free agents to kind of fill in at triple A and at the big league level. I hear young guys saying now, hey, when we get to the big leagues, right? As opposed to they're going to bring out another player from the outside. I hear a lot of internal promotion from inside. And I think that's valid, because I think the players realize that they do have opportunities. And I think they realize that they're really good. And those players that he mentioned, they have opportunities, and they are really, really good players. Obviously, they have some seasoning still to go, but the foundation is definitely, definitely there.
Yeah, I was just watching a spring training game. There was a game where Encarnacion Strand was at first, McClain was at second, Ellie was at shortstop. I think it was Steer at third base, but, you know, that could be a Marte in the future. There was Jay Allen was in the dugout. I think Hendricks was in the dugout that day. I'm like, all right, I can Stevenson behind the plate. Yeah. I know this Vio Hain catcher's a good one coming through the pipe. So you could just like, okay, if just most of these guys make it, which I hope they will. You could just see it. So that's part of fantasizing. All right. I've bored you too long with questions like this. I played in my theme music coming in, but perhaps I should have played this.
Why did I start laughing? Red Hot in the Rain, coming live from WKRP in Cincinnati.
Now, we need to talk about this. I've been wanting to talk about this for years. Because I think we have Paul O'Neill leading off here. Is that right? Is
he? Yeah, that was a late day decision to make because he showed up, and I don't know if we expected him to show up. Yeah. We didn't have a part for him.
Well, so here's his part. Now I present the champion.
Yeah.
All right. Now, before we go further, the story behind this? Who wrote this? Did you write this?
I wrote it along with guys from Cincinnati. Some of the guys from the neighborhood. Gooch was my boy. Terry Gibson. There were a couple other guys.
Produced it. Yeah. Did everything. We didn't get no royalties off that. I'm mad. I'm still mad. Because I heard it made some paper and we didn't get none of it.
It made some paper?
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Well, let's get a little more here. Circa 1990. I'm B-Lars. I'm here with the rest of my crew. Boogie East, Buzz McKenzie, the Nasty Boys too. Coming to you live just to bust the groove. With some help from my homeboys to make you move. This is the time of year to take the pen. Ain't no half-stepping, so let's win it. Listen up, listen to the story. This is the year, the moment of glory. From the sea, the streets of L.A. I chose ball. Don't live the wrong way. Come on with them. People doing drugs and acting like the cool. If they were smart, they'll keep the silly bus in school. Enough of that. Don't want to tell you what to do. Just listen up. I know you two is right for you. Back to this rap and listen what we got to say. Because 1990, we're going to take it all away. Red, red. Red hot. Love it.
All you can see in the video is Billy Hatcher doing this.
Yeah, he was. He was.
Yeah, man, that was amazing, man. I remember I was talking to Gooch, my boy, about this. And, you know, we made the comment. We were like, you know, the Super Bowl shuffle thing, bro, we got to do something like that.
Yeah.
We got to do something like that, man. And, you know, him and Terry and some of his other boys, they start putting some stuff together. Gooch lived like two houses up from my mom and dad growing up. So we were in the basement of his house one day, and he was like, well, what do you think about this? Well, Boogie's from L.A., so let's talk about, okay, we know what my part's going to be. I'm going to introduce whatever, blah, 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 the team. All right, let's talk about Boogie. What are we going to do? Well, where's he from? He's from L.A. And, you know, and it's like these guys are so, like, talented. They just start coming up with stuff. All right, I'm from L.A., the streets of L.A. or whatever. Yeah. I'm Boogie E, you know, whatever it is. Yeah, that's what I call, that's his nickname, bro, Boogie. You got to put Boogie in there. You got to find out, like, that's how it happened. And they put it together, bro. I mean, it was amazing, that creation. It was fun. It was amazing. But the crazy thing was, I go back to the guys. I'm like, yo, we're going to do this music video. We're going to do this song. Like, all right, cool. Now, we got to do this song way before.
That was my next question.
Way before we ended up winning. It was like, so you know how they have the commercials for the Super Bowl champion, like right after the Super Bowl's over, they world champion. But the other, they had it in the, you know, they had it ready, kind of queued up. Whoever's going to win, that's how it was. We had it queued up. And once we won, it was like, all right, let's roll it, bro. Let's roll it out. So we worked on that and we made the video in probably a month or so before the season was
over. Yeah. And the Super Bowl shuffle, I think, was the same way. They recorded it before.
But
they didn't have no rhythm. We had rhythm. They didn't have no rhythm.
Well, not all of us.
Hold on a
second.
I looked at the video.
Not all of us, bro.
Myers and Dibble and Charlton looked a little stiff there. In fact, how did you have to talk them into that? No. Were they down with it?
Oh, of course, bro. The only one that really struggled was Saves. Saves really struggled with it.
That's the Nasty Boys.
This is our time to shine.
Yeah.
That's why we're busting this ride. The pitch we're throwing today. Stay in school, study hard,
and you go a long way. When duty calls, Herm will deliver. Herm Winningham.
Herm had that bass, bro. Herm had that voice.
They got to be cat. That's Hatch right there. When we win the pennant, there's much
Hatch has got the high voice in this.
You can't touch this. I don't think anybody could understand Jose Rio.
Oh, my goodness.
He said towards the end. Well, he was talking about not doing, going to stay in his school.
Right. Say no to drugs, say no to school.
That was a big campaign
to,
in throughout the 80s. So.
Yeah. Mariano and Jose Rio, they were dressed for the occasion.
Yeah.
I mean, they came in like they were going to the studio to lay it down on some wax or whatever they say, bro. They were ready to go, both of them. Like, if you look at the video, I think everybody else was like in sweats or whatever. Yeah, yeah. But them two, I mean, they were suited and booted. That's right.
It was straight early 90s, too, because there were some real... some bright stuff going on. There's a full
some high top
suits.
Fade. Yeah. There's some kid and play going
Barry
on.
Barry had a fade.
I sure on. Did.
Or you had a flat top.
I had a flat top, but it was faded. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was faded. But as for you youngsters out there, just go on YouTube and click in Red's Hot, and it will come up. Now, the chorus, it's catchy. So where'd you?
Once again, it was those guys, man. I mean, I can't take the credit for that. It was... I think it was Two Vane was the name of their group. It was Daryl Gibson, Terry Gibson, and Todd. I forgot Todd's last name, but I just went to them, or we actually, Gooch and I are boys, so we start talking about it, and they got it together, and they kind of put it all together. It turned out pretty daggone good, at least at that time it was.
Now we got to hear Sabo here. Oh. Noxy.
Yeah.
Did you hear him say way back there?
I did. I did. That's another story we got to talk about. Go Sabo. Go Sabo. Go, go, go Sabo. Clean cut hard work. That's what you see. Diving catches stolen base. It's fun to me. Another double look out. Who can it be? Dust settles, it's me. Spuds McKenzie. Just wait and see. So... we were sitting there, and Spuds was supposed to do this whole part by himself. And we were over there coaching him on when to come in. And it was like he could not figure it out at all. And so we were like, how are we going to do this? And then Glenn Bragg stepped up. He was like, I'll kind of lead him in, right? We got it. But it was, bro.
It turned out better than we could have thought it was going to be because it was perfect.
Well, I'm still talking about it today. Yeah. I mean, I'm tickled to death to roll this in. Make it to the big leagues just like me. Striking out, here's is what I do. Stay straight or you'll be struck out too. This is again, this reason our heart. Stay in school, Rio. You'll go far.
Don't do drugs. Don't be a loser. Listen to us and don't be a loser.
We're the Reds. I love it. What a great year. And I know that people are in Cincinnati right now and experience this. They have a smile on their face because that was a great, great year.
Yeah.
Great year.
It was, man.
And the songs, because you guys had characters. And this is, a perfect reflection of the type of team you had, type of characters you had, type of people you had.
And anytime you have a good meal, you got different foods, you got different flavors, you got different parts of the meal. And that's what our clubhouse was a good group of different people that flowed together for the common goal, which our meal was to win the World Series. And that's a perfect example of that is what you heard on that song.
Yeah. Oh, no question about
it. But, it wasn't always all harmony, man. It wasn't like we had our struggle. We didn't have our struggles. It wasn't like we didn't have our fights in the clubhouse. I mean, obviously, some of them were a little more
publicized than others.
But, it was like, hey, there are going to be some struggles. And there were some struggles. There was some doubt here and there. The only person I think that I've ever played with that had no doubt or struggles, at least externally, was this dude right here next to me, Boogie. And, it was like, for us, because we were all so young, we were still kind of trying to identify or kind of figure out who we were. And, and so we had a very strong leader in Lou Piniella and a very strong leader in 44. But we were all young and early in our career, so we were still trying to establish ourselves. And so There were plenty of times. I mean, you hear that song and everything is nice and fun and yeah, it's all good and all, but it wasn't like that all the time, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Not at all.
No, it was time during when tough love was acceptable too. So I'm sure you guys had some moments.
And constructive criticism.
Very much so. Yeah. You had some top of the step guys. You don't see that as much anymore nowadays. But all right. Now you mentioned hitting it way back. Are we talking about the wall scraper thing here? What are we talking about?
Hold on, JD. What do you mean the wall scraper thing? What are you talking about?
You said it one time. He talked about your home runs being wall scrapers.
No, I didn't say his was wall scrapers.
So listen.
His was off the bricks.
Here we go. All right. So we were in the clubhouse the other day, just here. This just happened a week ago, right? And so we're sitting around and someone was like, hey, y'all were playing Houston. Billy Doran was there. And he brought up like, yeah, you guys went back to back to back. And he said he went to the mound to talk to the pitcher. And then he said, the only reason I'm here is to give the fireworks guy time to reload because everybody keeps taking you deep, right? So that was Billy's comment, right? And so we were all laughing. And then somebody pulls up the video.
I did. Right. You know who pulled a video
and,
up.
And
I did.
Hey, listen, I'm not saying who. I'm just saying it. So.
Gotcha.
So Sable hit the first home run to left field. Fly ball to left field. Left fielder back. Boom. Gone. Next up, Barry Larkin. Line drive to left field. Oh, and it's over the wall right in left field. Back to back home runs. Up comes Davis. Deep fly ball. deep left field. And that's what he picks up on. He's like, all right, so I want y'all not to just watch the video, but I want y'all to listen to what the announcer says, right? And the announcer said, fly ball, deep fly ball.
There had to be some consistency with that. I didn't want to be the same as those guys. I had to just stretch him out just a little bit.
So
you got some Lee May in you.
So absolutely.
Just a tad.
So the wall scraper, I hit a home run at some particular point, and then, you know, normally we get the ball and they write, you know, home run September, whatever it is, off of blah blah blah, 2-1 ball game. I get a ball back in my locker that I hit deep, right? I hit a home run, and it's got a yellow mark on it. I'm like, what the heck is this? Well, somebody took the yellow marker and said that I just cleared the outfit field fence. And you know that yellow line that's at the top of it?
Oh, yeah.
It was a scraper. I didn't want him to tell a wrong story because that ball didn't lie.
He put a yellow.
If he showed that ball, it was going to be some yellow part right on the middle. That was the giggles we had.
Oh, that was it. Yeah. I mean, that's how it was all the time. And, you know, it really was an environment. Like, our clubhouse was tense, and you had to be on your P's and Q's. You had to be ready. When you walked into that clubhouse, you had to be ready because shots were going to be fired all around the room. And it wasn't just us. It was Browning. You know, it was Dibs. It was Randy Johnson with his, or Randy Myers with his dag on live grenade.
It's just crazy.
It was crazy as Norm Charlton. You know, it was everybody. It was Herm doing his thing. It was everybody had a little piece here and there.
I was just always felt that laughter cured a lot of things. And when you can make somebody that's nervous or got some anxiety and you can make them giggle for a little while, it kind of at eases that tension a little bit. So that's all we did was just made sure that, yeah, we knew what was at stake, but more times than not, if you felt the pressure, because Lou did his damnedest to keep the pressure going on us all the time. I mean, he'd turn over the spread, he'd be in the shower, he did a lot of different things. Because that's just how much he wanted to win. But us being young, we was like, wait a minute, we got this. You know what I'm saying? We going to play and stuff. Because we went wire to wire. So we didn't taste second place at all in the division. So we had built something about, like, we was expecting ourselves to win. But we couldn't, like, really flash it and put it out there. So Lou would try to keep us humble a little bit by saying we hadn't done anything yet and we were going to lose this. And and hum baby this and hum baby that when he was talking about Roger Craig. So we had a lot of things that we had to deal with. And to me, it was easier when you had laughter.
No, I don't think there's any doubt about that. And speaking of easing tension, inning one, game one, World Series, the home run, I mean. How big was that for that dugout?
It was appropriate, right? It was, you know.
Because it was his team and
because it was his team,
the tone.
It was the tone. And, you know, all we heard was we didn't have a chance.
Yeah.
And he was in there talking about, bro, they saying we ain't got no chance. We going to show them, right? And so, you know, as young players, you're sitting there like, okay, you know, yeah. I hear what you're saying. Then when he did what he did, when he hit that home run, it was like, oh, like that? Okay, now we can roll. That really kind of, it was so appropriate it happened that way.
Like, they did us kind of dirty. They didn't even want to speak to us or anything.
The A's?
Yeah. It was only a few guys that came and spoke to us out there. They did their thing, and they had their sleeves rolled up and stuff like that, which was kind of a slap in the face because we had just as many All-Stars on our team as they had on their team. And for us to go wire to wire and to get through a really, really, really tough Pittsburgh team, because they kind of mirrored us. And the only thing for us that really we felt separated us was our bullpen, because they had a great lineup and they kind of played the same style of ball that we played. And then when we got there, we knew them. They didn't know us. Because like Honeycutt and Welch and those guys, we faced a lot of those guys because they came from the National League. So we felt confident in our abilities against them. They didn't know our guys, so that's why we was kind of quietly confident about they don't even know what they finna run into, you know?
Yeah.
And then when I hit the home run, and I tell people this all the time, yeah, it ignited it, but if Rio comes back out that next inning to give up three runs, it negates it, so we don't even be having these conversations. But him going out and then shutting them out, it was really like a slap. It was like a hammer down to them because they didn't expect that. For us to come out there and hit him over the head and then drop a sledgehammer on him too and then shut him out and for us to move and then beat Eckersley the next night, it was a wrap. It was just a matter of what it was going to be, four or five.
You know, the thing that I remember about that series, early in that series as a player, was the reaction of Ricky Henderson when Jose Rijo struck him out with the slider and Ricky took that bat and put it over his head and he was like, oh boy, you know, I never talked to Ricky about this, and you know, we don't really talk too much about that when we get to the Hall of Fame, we don't really talk about it, right? But he had that bat over his head, and I remember looking at him like, oh, we got them. At you know, that was just it was a frustration on his part, and Rijo was slinging the thing, and Boogie hit the home run. And it happened early. I think it was in game one. Maybe it wasn't in game one, but I just remember him.
Oh, it was game one.
Mm-hmm.
Inning one.
I just remember him with that bat over his head, like he was like baffled, like how in the world is this happening? And then I remember seeing that, you know, because you try to pick up on cues of the opposition and you're like, okay, he's frustrated. Guy go throw his bat or, you know, cussing or whatever he's doing, right? Snapping, right? I remember that. And when that happened, he hit the home run and that happened. I'm thinking, oh man, we got them, right? Yeah. And then it was over. It was literally over.
Well, the look on Dave Stewart's face when you hit it, he tried to keep the stoic look on, mean look he had on his face, but you could see in his eyes, like, oh man, that was my best.
But it
pitch.
Was crazy because that identical situation happened in the All-Star game in Anaheim. I had came up in an identical situation, two outs, man on first base, and he threw me a first pitch fastball for a strike, and I took it, and he threw me four splits, and he walked me. And I was like, damn, Stu, you're going to fuck throw me four splits? He said, I gave you one. You wasn't ready for it. I said, okay, you're right. So all of that time when we clinched and we playing Oakland, and I know that he's going to beat opening day pitcher, all of that was resonating in my mind that he was going to give me one and that was it. And I was going to have to fend for myself. And the identical situation presents itself. And I said, if he throws me this fastball, I'm not taking this one because I know that's going to be the only one that I'm going to get. And that was the result of pitchers being kind of in their routine on how they think about if I can get ahead and then go to my split, because that was really his best pitch was his split.
How much, when you guys have had the reunions, is it just like picking up where you left off, teammates, like years hadn't gone by, and is it that sort of thing?
It's always pick up. Yeah. Anytime we get together, it's always pick up. It's just a long extension cord.
Yeah.
That's plugged in from year to year to year, or 5 years at a time and stuff. But when you spend so much time, and we've been actually blessed to been able to have this job and to see each other on a regular basis. But and you know more the other guys, we only get a chance to see them. But when you see them, you see them. But just the fact that you have that, and then when Browning was alive, may he rest in peace, my partner. And he would be down here, and then you would see us talk and all the different things, and then you start to have those conversations, and then we really start to reminisce, and then it becomes really more. But it's always just an extension of being able to resonate with the guys that you spend so much of your life with.
Who are some favorite? I know you'll leave some guys out, but favorite teammates? I'm sure you get asked that on the circuit when you're speaking, whoever. Who are your favorite guys that you're around? Who's on the list?
Luis Quiñones.
Clothed or not clothed?
Louis Q. You know, we had so much personality.
That's a joke, by the way, B.
Right, right. We had so much personality. You know, it was the frontline guys were awesome, right? Saves was amazing. And Pablo, him and Paul O'Neill had
just
their own.
Just that interaction?
Oh,
oh my
man.
God, it was priceless.
They had their own kind of... I don't know if it was a language or what, but it
dialogue.
Was, hey, pal.
So, what you doing, pal?
I mean, these two good. Like, what the heck are they talking about, right?
You keep swinging and missing, pal.
Crazy. Crazy.
What? And you couldn't help but giggle with it. It was just so many different ways. And then you switch into Randy Myers, and then you get into Norm and Deb, and then Rio had his language. And then Mariano, and see, we all had our own different things that we brought to the table that made it what it became. But it was just so many. Then he became Barry Larkin from Censorico when he learned Spanish, and everything was habla. I was like, what? Like, okay, we don't do English in America no more. What are we doing? And
Censorico,
book, you gonna have to learn Spanish, book. I said, I'm from not Los Rico, I'm from Los Angeles. So it was all of that was going on.
Yeah.
It was so much going on.
Well, I said Quiñones, clothed or not clothed, just to explain to people, he had the tendency to run around the clubhouse with no clothes on.
Crack. That was him, sure.
All the time.
Q was beautiful, man. Q was amazing.
But he would always, anytime we was in an airport, he would always get a lady and say, excuse me, miss, you dropped something. And they would always look, and again, he would get a dollar bill sometime and put a string on it and say, ma'am, you been, and he would just keep pulling the string and the lady keep grabbing at the money. So it was always something with him.
Yeah.
And it was always at the right time. And we was coming off a road trip and we was going from one city to something, and the mood was kind of somber. He was always on time to raise that room. Guys, okay, let's forget about that game is over with. Let's get our giggle on and have a couple cocktails and do our thing. So he was always that type of guy that always brightened the mood at the right time.
Did you ever get tased by Randy Myers' taser?
No.
Nah.
Like Lou did?
No, nah. He knew who not to tase, bro. He knew who not to tase. Mr. Mello's not a dumb man, right? He knew who not to tase.
No, he wasn't gonna do that.
You know, one guy we don't talk about a lot is Ronnie Oster. You know, Ronnie Oster was really inspirational. You know, I don't know how much he played at that time. Mariano came in and I think kind of took over. But we were in L.A. and one of those times we were really struggling. Ronnie Oster was like, "Yo, man, we need to do something to bring this team together," and he kind of shaved his head bald, and guy said that they were going to join him, right? And he ended up being the only one to do it. But
they
but
saw it, the look on Ronnie Hill with a bald head, and they were like, my wife is out of here if I do that.
But nonetheless, it was inspirational. Yeah. You know, so.
Yeah. He was a huge part.
He was.
And to know him was to be so happy for him to be a part of that, because he was in Cincinnati before I came, and I watched him, and he was a good player, and he was probably one of the best second baseman hands-wise that I ever seen. And Lark knows in Philly, and they know way more than I do. But I used to hear other teams talk about his abilities to turn double plays and his range and different things like that. But from an emotional standpoint, he was right there to give us that, keep guys in check, because he had that veteran mentality. Him and Senior was there who had that veteran mentality that allowed guys to kind of pull a rope a little bit, but then it was like, okay, it's time to rein it in and let's get back to this. So it takes everybody. When you say it takes 25 guys to win a championship, it really does. Because if you look at our bench and you look at the knock he got, and then you look at and Ronnie was a better left-hand hitter than he was a right-hand hitter, and probably the biggest hit he got in his life was right-handed. Mm. And then you look at what Quinones did, and then what Herm Winningham did, and Glenn Braggs, and the list can go on, and you watch what our guys did, guys who like Scott Scudder and them who were starting and now was in the bullpen. So it took all of that in order for us to win, and we would be remiss if we didn't give them their just due, because they was just as intricate as it was us and all the other people who had a bigger part.
Yeah, you had Benzinger and Morris that both played first base. So
yep, Billy Bates scored the game winning run in game two.
One of my favorite
Joe Oliver double down the left field line off Eck.
Yeah. My favorite Nuxie call of all time.
Then you also have to look at the contributions that Billy Dorn gave us down the stretch prior to him hurting his back. Because he had some big times of where we was kind of tingering and stuff, and we got him.
Yep.
And he got some big hits in some big places at the right time and stuff, because I think our league got down to four. That's when Lou was talking about the hum, baby. It ain't going to be no this. We going to win and stuff. And I want to say Billy got some big hits in that series that helped us win those games, that took us from even being up 4-7, that kind of calmed the water. So it was a total team effort from all of us.
How many fans ask you about Lou?
A lot.
A lot. It's a lot, right?
Yeah.
They loved it.
He was an integral part of it, man. I think the team, I really truly believe that our team took on the personality of Lou Piniella. It was really a lot of passion. A little bit different than Pete. Pete was like that player's manager because he played and he was right there with you. Lou was like, he was separate. Although he did play, he was like the dictator, and this is the way it's going to go down. And I think we really needed that, because at the time, as Boogie said, we had finished in second place 3 or 4 out of 5 years, right? And prior years, and it was like, we need something to get over the hump. And, we were kind of the same players. We had a few guys here, they're different, but different leadership, different voice. And I thought Lou really provided that for us.
It was a lot of us that was skeptical, though. But I would say what really made it easy for us was we had a lockout. And we only played like 2 weeks or something. And the season started, because that was the first year we opened up on the road. We had all
Houston, right? Opened in Houston.
But the first game we played, we played like 7 innings or 8 innings, and because we had to get ready. Mm-hmm. And the guys who were fighting for a job, they were playing B games. And we were out there, so we had to come together really, really quick. It wasn't a 6-week honeymoon to try to fill out Lou or fill out the coaching staff or whatever. We had to really hit the ground running. So I would really say that helped us focus in on the game and really not Lou and what he was all about, because that was the first time. Pete didn't throw no bases like him and swear outside of the little incident he had with the umpire, but like Lou caught us by surprise. a lot of the things, we were like, man, this dude is crazy. What are we going to do with him? So we're glad we got that down the line and not early, because we might have kind of looked at him sideways, like, man, he on the sauce real quick, man. What are we going to do with him? You know what I'm saying?
I remember when Lou came to Cincinnati, everybody was like, yo, Lark, do you know who this new manager is? Because like Boogie said, we had a lockout. And then, it was like, oh, okay, we're going to start, right? And Lou, I just happened to be in Cincinnati when Lou had his press conference. and I met him. And normally, you know, it's like, okay, hey, let me talk to you about the team, this, that, and the other. There was none of that with Lou. So like Boogie said, it was like he came in and it was like, okay, this is the way we're going to do it. I don't accept losing. We're not going to lose. Let's get to work. And it's like, okay, it was, as I said, it was uncomfortable. There was tension, mm-hmm. right? It wasn't like a comfortable feeling in the clubhouse. It was love. It was good. It was, you know, a culture of winning, but it was not, there was tension. I'm telling you, there was tension there, bro. And I feel like that's what helped us get over that hump, because there was no happy to be there. It was happy to have an opportunity, but you better do something with this opportunity.
Oh, I love the sense of urgency. I wish it was around all the time, but I think it breeds success. But man, this is a treat. I'm not going to keep you guys any longer. I've kept you longer than I said I would. But I think the fans appreciate it. I know this is the middle of your day and can be a pain to do some of these things, but I know the fans are going to appreciate it. They're going to love this. So I appreciate the walk down memory lane.
Now hold on, JD. Since we got him on the mic,
Oh, I love this.
I have always dreamt about having an opportunity to work with this dude who did so much for me in my career, right? Just kind of allow people to kind of get inside, like our relationship, right? So a couple
Please,
things happened.
Take
bro.
Over, Barry. Come on.
A couple things happened, right? So Boogie and I were scheduled to do during a Reds Fest, scheduled to do this talk, right? And then, you know, we get out there, we start talking, the juices start flowing, the memories start coming, and we start telling stories. And we told stories, and we probably were supposed to be there for an hour. I think we were there for like 2 hours or so, and just telling all these different stories. But one thing that this guy does is he imitates hitters.
Oh, the best.
Unbelievable. Like everybody's batting stance.
Yeah.
We have somehow got to get him in a platform where we can show that about him.
Oh, I've got the platform.
And then he does the call. This is where I'm going. Of Vin Scully. He grew up listening to Vin Scully, and he has an amazing Vin Scully call. So when he came up to the booth last year in Cincinnati, and he was there, I kind of threw it at him like off air. I'm like, Boogie, come on, man, do your Vin Scully. He's like, nah, man, I can't do that. But I'm saying that today because we're going to have a whole bunch of
there
time.
There has to be a setting for that, man. I got to be
this
on
is a
scripted
perfect
with
setting.
That. No, it's not. I have to be. See, anytime you go in the booth, right, he has all his information and he knows the players and he knows the play-by-play. Just give me the lineups and let me look at them and let me watch what they do. And then I'll get into the game and then I'll get in that. But what I really would just do is just say one little quick one about how he talks about Barry Larkin when he'd be talking about Barry Larkin. And he has such a charismatic way of how he was doing it. And it was almost like, hi, everybody. Welcome to Dodger Stadium. This is Vin Scully. Number 15, turned it into number 11, Barry Larkin from Cincinnati, Ohio. What a player. What a player.
Yeah.
And then he would say, like, high drive in the deep left field. Back goes Baker. All way back to the warning track, to the wall. She's gone.
Yes. Right? Yes. But I got to get that live in a game that's happening in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
When he's sitting in the booth, you know, just throw your Vin Scully on there. Just call the game. Can I get that, Boogie? Can I get?
Come on,
I'm gonna work with that on you. Yes, I'm gonna work with that. Yeah, you're gonna get that. Yeah.
All right. Okay. That's all I want.
Now I have the forum to show these batting stances. In fact, it's something I've been wanting to do for years because I've seen you do it.
Yeah.
Like your Will Clark's amazing. Your Pete Rose is amazing. How you watched? So will you do this for our TV cameras?
Sure, I'll get that in for you.
Yeah. Man, that fans would love that because it's funny. It's good. It's not just like, it's funny because Eric Davis is doing it. They're actually
just
really
tell
good.
I kids all the time, if you can mimic a hitter, it's easy to make adjustments and it's easy to try different things. But most kids are so stuck in one apparatus that they don't see outside of themselves. And probably because we didn't have television when I was a kid, you didn't see a lot of the game, so you heard it on radio. So You had to visualize what they were doing when you got a chance to see them. So we would practice Pete Rose and Joe Morgan flapping the elbow and Willie Stargell and everybody. So that became you when you was playing pickle, when you was in the front lawn playing wiffle ball.
Oh, yeah.
I'm Reggie Jackson, and then we'd flip the bat and stuff like that. So that was part of our childhood.
Same thing. I had every member of the Big Red Machine down and other prominent players in the league. We all knew their batting stance. I still know their batting stance to this day. I could stand up and
yes, but could right you now. Talk like Tony Perez talk?
Probably not.
I like to tank.
But during Tony, oh my God, during Tony's acceptance speech, it's funny to see this dude is unbelievable. But anyway, during Tony's acceptance speech, you know, the one thing that we talked to these players, Tony Perez and Davey Concepcion, had been in the States for I don't know how many years playing, you know, in the States. And this guy over here used to get on both of them about, you've been here for 25 years, bro. You got to speak English. You can't speak Spanglish. You got to speak English, right?
Spanglish.
And, oh, my God. And then when
it's hilarious.
And then when Tony had his day in Cincinnati and he was like, well, how'd he go, Boogie?
I like to tank.
I like to tank.
My teammate. My family, the fan, gracias, amigo. And he went off into the sunset. And we were sitting like that. Who did he just tank? Did you hear who he just
tanked?
Thank you. He said he wanted to tank. I was like, who do you tank, man? But you have to hear him, and when you see them, and I don't know what Davey says, and he comes back to the Hall of Fame, and you got to follow the bouncing ball sometime with Davey to see what he's talking about. But it is hilarious, but...
But JD,
laughter once again.
So seriously, so when we would do like reunions, they would bring back the 75, 76 team and the 1990 team, right? And so just sitting there listening to these guys, first of all, shots fired amongst them, right? Doggy normally starts it. Pete and Joe, God rest his soul, was there, and JB, and those guys just going on and amongst themselves around the 75, 76. And then they turn their attention to the 90 team. And they look and they go, well, Lark, you're the backup shortstop. Oh, wow. Boogie is the only guy on the 90 team that would start on their team. And then they're like, oh, what about CeCe? You know, what about Cesar? No, well, Boogie's probably the only guy. And then maybe the guys in the bullpen, right? But to be a fly on the wall hear those guys go back and forth, it was some of the it was unbelievable. I wish that there was a recording device at that particular time to hear Joe Morgan, how he used to tell these guys that he would say, Tony Perez told Joe Morgan that the Cincinnati Reds, the Big Red Machine, made him a pretty ball player. Because when he was with the Colts or whoever it was, he was an ugly ball player.
And with the Astros, he was ugly.
Oh, man, just to sit here and listen to them. Just to sit here and listen to them. And, you know, and Pete Rose talking about, you know, how he made everybody better. He wouldn't have no. I say this to Boogie all the time, like, you're not hitting a three-run home run if I'm not on base. So, you know, that was Pete's thing. Pete was like, I'm always on base. And so, of course, you owe me everything, bro, you know. And it just to listen to those guys, and oh man, it was just amazing. My hope is that this team, at least while we're still around, the big league club has a chance to win, because you know the memories that we're able to kind of share with this younger generation of players is because we won. No one really wants to hear about trying hard.
Yeah.
Any and everybody can try hard, but it is difficult to win. And so when you have people that won, to be able to share what it took, and sometimes it's tangible, but many times it's not.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you can work on it. Other times it's just a feeling, you know. And so hopefully that feeling comes back to this organization, and hopefully we can be part of that.
Hear, hear. Believe me, I'm all in on that. Because we're still reliving this with the fondest of memories right now, the 1990 team, and it's been too long.
It's been a long time.
Been a long 33 time.
33 years.
Wow.
Can you believe it's been that long, you two?
Yeah, I can look at my wallet and tell it's been that long. Because it done got smaller every year.
How old are you, though? Your pension's about
I'm
ready to
60.
Kick. Oh, well, a couple of years from that pension kicking in, though, right?
And I got daughters and I got granddaughters, so they always in my wallet. Mm. Boys don't get in your wallet like girls get in your wallet, and they are all inside my wallet.
I got both, and I can attest to that. Yeah, that's true.
I get it. So, once again, I tried to shut it down before. Lark, you got anything else?
Hey, no, I'm good. I'm good, bro. I think we got to get out to the field.
Man. Yeah, no, I appreciate your time. And I'm going to have to roll you guys out, you know, the right way of this. I don't want to use my cheesy podcast theme. We're going to roll out with this. I appreciate you guys, man. Reds Country loves you.
All right, we the Red Hots.
Hey.
Be Lark and the rest of the crew.
Let me tell you a story about a baseball team on top of the game, and it's not a dream. All right, guys, thank you.
All right, we appreciate that.
All right, JD.
We out.